The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
We got the Karate Kid of economics. Tariffs on, tariffs off. Tariffs on, tariffs off. Bond yields rise, then come in again. And it was the best week for stocks this year. Plus listener questions, all this, and much more on episode number 615 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome to you. Thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And here we are in the first full week of June 2019, completed in the books, gone for the records. And now we are seeing some really interesting things. We saw a good week for markets, good week for fishing as well. I want to tell you maybe a quick story if I can, just for a minute, because it's kind of funny. You know, not always do things go right. You're on a boat, you got things happening, you got seas, you got engines, you got, you know, all just things that are going on. It's the start of mahi-mahi season. Some people call it Dorado. Some people call it dolphin fish. But on Saturday, we decided to go out fishing. We decided, hey, you know what? We're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to go out and do a little bit of deep sea fishing, but deep drop. In other words, we're going to go out and look for things like grouper and tilefish and maybe even black belly rosies. We're going to do this deep. We're going to go out to 800 to 1,000 feet of water. We're going to drop down a weight, maybe about 6 to 8 pounds, get to the bottom. We're going to put three different hooks on the rig. We're going to have some lights down there because it's very dark. You can't see down there. They say no light, no bite. So we have these flashing lights that can withstand the pressure of the water down about 800 feet, 1,000 feet, 2,000 feet. And we found some really interesting coordinates. We looked at the maps. We looked at the structure. We saw that there were some depressions and some areas that were really quickly going deep, and then they would have these walls on the side of it. So we thought, hey, maybe they would go in there, and that looks like some place that grouper hang out. And there's all sorts of grouper. There's snowy grouper, there's black grouper, there's Goliath grouper, all sorts of different grouper we're going to look for. Okay, so here we are. We go out, and we found this really cool bottom structure, and we dropped down a couple different places. Nothing happening. One of the lights actually exploded, so we had to replace that. No big deal. We go out, we find another spot, and we finally get things going, and all of a sudden the rod starts bending pretty significantly. I'm like, wow, what's going on there? And it starts bending even more. Now, when you see a rod bend like it did, where it has no bounce, like there's no fight, caught the bottom. And that would make sense because the areas that we're fishing in had these kind of areas that were maybe some walls surrounding some deep areas. So if you didn't pick up the weight quickly enough and get it out of the way of any of this structure, that possibly you would see that there was going to be maybe a hang-up. There would be a snag. But what usually happens is you can kind of put the engines in the reverse direction, pull it away, or unfortunately what will happen is the line will snap and you'll be fine. Well, the rod kept on bending and bending. And we did our best to kind of loosen it up and then try to do a few things, back the boat down. All of a sudden, we hear this snap. The rod snaps. The rod broke in half. Now, you would think that we get 50-pound braid. In other words, 50-pound braid can withstand the pressure of 50 pounds of snap test. In other words, if there was this fish that was not just 50 pounds, but a little bit more than that, and fighting you and snapping, that 50 pound of snap pressure would break the line. Maybe even one of the possible, I would think that maybe you would break on one of the knots that we tied, or maybe there would be some other weak spot in the line. Maybe even the terminal tackle where we have the clips that go on for the hooks. Maybe that would snap. Nope. Rod kept on bending over, then just kapang, breaks in half, flies in the water. Finally, the rod is still holding on a little bit with some of the line, and that snaps too. So there we are with this really expensive Shimano bent butt fiberglass composite rod snapped in two. It's like $400. $75 of gear gone. Now we're kind of pissed off. So we go on and we go fishing for something else. We're like, okay, let's just get out of here. So we find some really cool, in about, I would say about 950 feet of water, about 5 miles off of the coast of South Florida. We find these really cool weed islands where all the weed comes together and creates this kind of island area. And usually underneath that, that's bait. And when there's bait, there's bigger fish. So we're looking around, we're looking for some mahi-mahi, and all of a sudden, there it is. That bait flash we saw, blue-green, off to a dolphin derby. If you've never been fishing for dolphin in South Florida, it's something you need to do. It's, in the summertime, it gets kind of crazy. It gets exhausting. These are unbelievable fighters, and they don't give up. And when you start catching these things and bringing them on the boat, it's like they're everywhere. There's not enough time, and the fish are just everywhere. They're just biting on anything. So it's pretty exhausting. It's pretty tough. But we brought back about 8, made some ceviche out of it, grilled them up. But what I did was a quick calculation on this. Here's the point of the story. here's what's going. This is the funny part. So the cost of the outing, as I calculated, was about $600. So between fuel, between the lost gear, about $75, between the lost tackle, on top of the $400 rod, so about $600. The cost per pound of fish that we brought back, cleaned up, done, in fillets, about $75 a pound. You can get this in the store for less than $10 a pound. But it was fun. Part of the game. But you know, it reminded me of something. It reminded me of how investors are buying stocks these days, right? You know, how they're looking at buying at any price. Because, I don't know, maybe they see it as fun, a game. They see it as a sport. But it's kind of like we went out and we go fishing and we know it's going to cost a lot more because it's enjoyable. It's fun. We have a good time. You know, you get together with a bunch of people. You have a good time. You have some fun. Go out there. But same thing's happening with stocks. We see some of these prices of the multiples of where we are now, like on the Case-Shiller CAPE Index. Now moving back to the highs that we've seen, very close to, not at the highs, but close to the highs we've seen before. The IPO market and the pricing of some, look at Beyond Meat and some of these companies that recently reported, you know, 35 times forward sales estimates. I mean, that's pretty frothy for an alternative burger company. So, I mean, just, you know, Zoom Media, a little bit better valuations, but also being bid up pretty significantly after their first earnings report post-IPO. But what we're finding is that there is this interesting, I think, game that's being played right now. And this is on the heels of some, I would say, best put, disappointing. It's got to be disappointing economic numbers that we saw recently. Last week, we saw the ADP employment number. And then that came at, 20,000, the worst actual number that ADP printed since the beginning of the expansion, like 10 years ago. So we're finding that this weird market environment that while there is this slowdown everywhere around the world, and that is, mark my word, that is coming home here. That is what is happening here in the U.S. We are seeing that the slowdown has finally started to reach our shores. In the area of manufacturing, we're seeing some slowdown, inventory growth, factory orders. We're seeing wage growth slow down. And now we're seeing employment, which was the last, even though it's a backward-looking number, a little bit lagging. I'll give you that. But what we're seeing is that there is a slowdown that appears to be gaining some speed, some traction. We're seeing that there's some concern in the tech space. We're seeing a rotation of sorts into cyclicals. And this is all in the hope that, well, there's going to be a rate cut. We got the tariffs that are starting to cause problems economically. We're seeing that the problem around the world where they need to reduce rates, and we can't have our rates higher because that would kind of shift the world into a real bad situation. We're seeing that there is a slowdown and there is some concern by the Fed that moving forward, looking outward, they're not seeing anything really good. I mean, the OECD and the World Bank recently cut down overall global growth by a significant amount. We're seeing that now some of the Fed is showing about, you know, 1 to 1.5% growth rate GDP into the second quarter. And whatever the reason is, whatever you want to blame it on, it doesn't matter. That is the number. So this whole idea that, hey, the Fed is going to come to the rescue again has really permeated the mindset of investors. And so what we're finding is that now they're looking at about a 77% chance of a rate cut by the July meeting, and even a 35% chance of a rate cut by the June meeting in a couple of weeks or next week. That's just astonishing if you consider that all things were good. Thumbs up, green lights, absolutely, hey, we're on autopilot. The U.S. economy is impervious to any of these outside influences. And now here we are, just 6 months later, after we had a rate cut, a rate increase process that raised rates not even to a normalized rate that we saw historically, but still to a level that is probably considered emergency rate levels. We can't even get past that on our economy with a 3.6% employment rate and with generally a 3% GDP number. Tax cuts for companies. I mean, we just can't seem to get around this. For whatever reason, we're hooked. Investors, markets, economies need to have substantially low rates in order to continue to expand. That's absurd. I mean, it's just absurd. So now what's happening, it looks like to me at least, and I think that you'd probably agree with this. I think there's nothing that I'm going to tell you here that you're going to be like, oh yeah, well, that's new. That's woo, that Horowitz is onto something. I mean, I think you'll realize, I mean, hey, investors are seeing this bad news as good news once again. Whenever there is the opportunity for the Fed to step in, rates to go down, anything that we see that may be a problem from an economic standpoint, all of a sudden looks like the markets are going to start getting bid up and buying up. So we saw the employment report. We saw 75,000 jobs added, a 3.6% unemployment rate, wage growth slowing a little bit. And initially when we saw that on Friday, there was a little bit of a drop on the futures, because it was pre-market, it came out at 8:30 in the morning. And then all of a sudden, ding, 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 the bell opens and markets are off to the races. I think there was two things that really contributed to that. First of all, you had this momentum flow through from the beginning of the week that all of a sudden there was this thought that, hey, you know what? Maybe these Mexican tariffs aren't going to be implemented, which we'll get to in a second. But I also think that there is this idea that's sitting in the back of the heads of investors and institutions that said, you know what? You know, if worse comes to worse, we'll see a rate cut. If things slow, there'll be a rate cut. And the narrative goes like this, that if in fact we do see a rate cut, that's good for stocks. Rate cuts equal good news for stocks. Now, remember something. Rate hikes were also good for stocks. That was the narrative for that as well. Don't fight the Fed. Only is good. And it's only something you should follow if the Fed is cutting rates. Unless they're raising rates, and that's okay to at that point to disregard it. So in a nutshell, here's the deal. When the Fed cuts rates, buy stocks. When the Fed increases rates, buy stocks. If the Fed does nothing, buy stocks. That's the narrative. It's the same narrative that you get with gasoline, oil prices, right? So, I mean, we talked about this. Think about the insanity of this. If oil prices go down, it's good for the consumer. It's good for the consumer because why? Well, simply, the consumer has more money to spend. They don't have that out-of-pocket, immediate tax on their wallet when they go to fill up their car. That makes sense. I don't think anybody could argue that point. If prices at the pump go down, it's a good thing for the consumer. However, the opposite doesn't hold. That's what the narrative says, at least. If prices go up at the pump, consumers see through that. It's okay. They find a way to spend. They find a way to go out and actually somehow look beyond the fact that there is this wallet tax. And it doesn't cause any problems. So here we are in a situation very similar to gas prices and oil prices, where there is this narrative. And when I say the word narrative, remember what that means. It's the idea that there is it's a kind word for brainwashing. That's what it is. It's a way to explicitly see what is being said, written about, and distributed to individuals in the form of essentially a brainwashing. So now we are in a world of, hey, if the Fed is going to cut rates, prices of stocks should rise, because what happens is that when you look at the valuations of stocks in a rate hike environment or a rate cut environment, it's a lot better to own stocks if rates are lower. Of course, unless rates go higher, then of course that's a good thing, because the economy is doing well and the Fed is behind it, trying to slow it down a little bit. But at the same time, companies are able to do better. The whole point of rates going up is the economy is really doing very well. And if the economy is doing really well, the stocks should be going well too. So therefore, buy stocks. Point is that right now we're in an environment that bad news is good news. Because now we have the implicit, I would say, safety net that the Fed has put forth. And we see this by them marching out the various Fed speakers on a weekly basis talking about it. So that's where we are. Let's set the stage for where we are at this point. Bad news is good news. The Fed has our back. The narrative says buy stocks. You may say, well, okay. I get it. All right, Horowitz, what do you say? Well, I say that sentiment will be raised if, in fact, the Fed does actually cut rates temporarily. I think this is a very quick shot in the arm that will soon be realized as what it is. It's a panic by the Fed to keep ahead of the potential for a massive slowdown due to the global backdrop and what's going on with tariffs. Now, the one wild card in this is how the tariff deals play out. How long tariffs will be implemented for or not. What the resolution will be if, in fact, tariffs are either lifted or if they stay on. How will that play out? And that ties right back into the big story of the week, doesn't it? The whole Mexican tariff game. Twisted markets around. We had 9 days of just absolute nonsense, just ridiculous nonsense of tweets and going back and forth. Oh, we're going to impose these 5% tariffs, and it's going to be June 10th, and it's going to be, you know, all this. Let's look at this for a second. We had the first tweet that was on a Thursday night. Markets dived on the Friday, right into the end of the month. Mexico comes to the table. They said, hey, you know what? We're willing to talk. Well, come on. We want to talk. We want to figure this out. We don't want to have a lot of problems with this. We want to actually, you know, make sure that there is a way that we can figure out what to do here. We want to play ball. We don't want to have these problems. So all of a sudden there's this excitement going into the beginning of the week that, well, you know, Mexico is going to cave. Mexico is going to do something to make sure that they don't have these tariffs. They're going to go along with whatever it is. Throughout the week, we see that this is the case. And then we see more tweets by President Trump about, hey, we're not going to do a deal with Mexico if they don't comply with every single thing that we're talking about. We're really going to probably implement these tariffs. More talks happen. markets now of a belief throughout the week that, you know what, there's not going to be any tariffs imposed. How would that happen? I don't see how that's going to happen. You know, markets are pretty good at sniffing out the truth here. And magically, after the close of the futures, after the close of the markets on Friday night, right before you would see these tariffs being implemented on the Monday following or Sunday night at 12 midnight, amazingly, there's an announcement. There's a deal. Tariff threat is withdrawn indefinitely. I mean, think about this. What do we call this crap? Is it tariff by tweet? Okay, that's fine. Is it bullying by tariff? Tariff for fornication? Tariff? I don't even know. Tariff fornication. That would be good. Tariff fornication. And I don't understand the point of all this and what the whole idea is. I mean, listen, already we're seeing several stories that are coming out that most of what was agreed to in the deal that was finally agreed to was already agreed to months before. So now we have a situation here where maybe this is all done because of political motives. And you say, Andrew, what are you, an idiot? Of course that's what it is. But now we're holding markets and economies hostage to political motives. And you may say, Andrew, well, what are you thinking? Of course that's the case. Okay. But it's hard to be in a position that you have to be on the lookout for all of this on a regular basis, because now what you're finding is as we're getting closer to an election, that anything is being done, anything is being said in order to gain popularity votes. And if in fact a lot of the things that were already put into these tariffs were actually agreed to months ago, I think there's going to be a reckoning. This is the boy that cried wolf. If tariffs were really not ever going to be implemented, if it was all about President Trump creating a problem, solving a problem, taking credit for the solution, now all of a sudden I think you get into a really very concerning area when it comes to the China tariffs. And now we also have the addition that President Trump is telling us that, hey, you know what? Mexico is also going to be buying enormous amounts of agricultural products from our farmers. Unfortunately, Mexico's denying they ever said that, and they're denying it was ever part of the deal. So I don't know what the story is there. So maybe we get this market mayhem that's good for political gain. Maybe it's a trial balloon that can be looking at, okay, this Mexico deal could be kind of a miniature version of the China deal. Let's see how markets react in this if we lift any trade threats, to see how they'll react if we lift the threats and we lift the tariffs on China. But then over the weekend, we have more threats again over this weekend about, you know, hey, if China is not going to come to our side, we're going to definitely increase the tariffs. If they don't do what we're going to say, we're going to increase the tariffs. We're going to keep these on for a long period. This is exactly what was said. This is exactly what was done with Mexico. So now I don't think markets are going to believe any of this. And if you heard me last week, look. Last Tuesday on DH Unplugged, it was Tuesday, 5 days, 4 days before the tariffs were lifted, 6 days or so before tariffs would have been implemented. I said very clearly, and I predicted, that there will be no tariffs implemented, and that would come before futures opened on Sunday evening. Now, I was off by a couple of days in that I thought it would have been right before futures opened that we would hear this news. What ended up happening is, well, they did, yes, announce it before futures were open, but more importantly, they announced it during the period where futures were closed. They waited for the close of futures to announce the deal because they're looking for some shock and awe. They're looking for the opportunity to surprise markets. But I don't think markets were surprised. This could be a sell the news situation, by the way. I'd be kind of very surprised if we're going to see any further follow through to the upside that's a magnitude of what we saw last week on this, because already there was hints, there was intimations that this deal was probably going to play out and probably tariffs would not be implemented. That was, we were going into the close with that idea on Friday. So now again, I guess we have to look at this. Now, one thing I just really want to say. Now, it doesn't matter. I don't really care if you're a fan of President Trump or a Democrat or an independent. I don't really care. I'm not talking about it in that regard. I don't think we got a lot from the new NAFTA, the USMCA. I just don't think that what I've seen, there was a lot of real benefit from that. I don't see any benefit from this deal, the deal we did threatening 2 weeks ago to put tariffs on Mexico, unless they did these things, considering the fact that a lot of these things were baked in already and were being done already. So I don't believe any of that, by the way. I really don't. Now, do I like the taxes? Yes. Do I like some of the things that are being done to protect intellectual property? Yes. Do I like the pro-business and reduce regulations? Absolutely. I don't like the tariff tactic, and you know that. So this is not a political statement. It's a statement of process, of how this is all being done. The Machiavellian approach to the ends justify the means that I do not agree with, because I don't think it will end well. That's the problem. I don't think it's being done that puts the U.S. on the best stage internationally for the benefit of the U.S. Not because we really care necessarily how everybody else feels about us, but at the same time, yes, it'd probably be nice to enter into business relationships that are based on mutual respect and mutual agreement and mutual feelings that the other side will, in fact, keep good on what they said they're going to do. But I think markets are getting a little exhausted by this game. I think markets are getting a little bit tired of this, you know, wax on, wax off, tariff on, tariff off. I do think that this is not going to end well, because I think the wild card that you have here is that China is a much different animal on all sorts of levels than Mexico. And I think that they're miscalculating China. I think they're unless they're just going to say, okay, whatever China agrees to, we're going to make it look really good, polish it up, and spit it out and tell the American people that, hey, this is a great deal. And if that's the case, then I think then they'll have a bit of a win there, because, well, markets are gullible. Let's admit to that. Markets like to go up. Individuals like the silver lining, and they buy into that, and that's fine. I mean, until it's not. So I think what's happening here is we're getting this situation where markets are being manipulated. I think that's the facts. As a matter of fact, it's deliberate. And let's also state the fact: if the president wasn't the president, and it was some other firm, PR agency, or company doing what he does with regard to tweeting about this and moving markets, I think there'd be some SEC actions at this point. Don't you think? I've had some listener questions that have asked me about that. So right now, what I think you need to do is be on your toes about markets. I think you should be looking at some of the cyclicals. If there is, in fact, the Fed in play here, looking at things like maybe the steel companies once again, because if you looked at a stock chart on any of these companies that were the ones that were initially involved in the tariffs in the beginning, I mean, U.S. Steel down, I don't know, 60% from its high. These are stocks that you may want to consider in the area of cyclicals, away from tech, because they're going to be the battleground for this whole tariff situation moving forward. So I think that when we look at the markets right now, I think there is a lot of euphoria that is baked back in again. I think that some of the earnings and concerns and the, well, let's just say confusion that's been brought upon by the back and forth on all this is going to actually come out very clear in the next quarter, as it has been starting to evolve this quarter. where we saw the companies were pulling their guidance, talking and starting to talk around the edges about the global slowdown, concerned about how much the tariffs are costing. And unless there is something miraculous that happens, a la the Fed really cutting rates dramatically, maybe holding off on, or maybe going back to a quantitative easing program, you know, next quarter, I think we need to be on our toes here. Watch for a significant rotation with some of the players that have been cut down significantly because we're getting towards the end of the cycle on the potential for tariffs and for the fact that President Trump needs to make a deal politically to ensure that there is some really good political capital gained towards the election. And we're starting to get into that zone right now. And remember, there is a lot of market action that can be looked upon historically through presidential cycles. And we're really getting close to that level right now where a lot of promises will be made and a lot of opportunities will be looked at to try to get votes. So keep a look at that. What I want to do is I want to talk about some of the economics and look back at what we saw last week. Again, this poor jobs number that was put out, 75,000. Is that permanent? Is it weather related? It looks like there may be a little bit of a hiccup in the numbers. We did see initial claims still holding pretty low. I would say that, again, one number doth not make a trend. Remember that. At the same time, we're seeing weakening around the edges, and that's kind of interesting. Watch the narrative. You know, this whole idea of buying stocks, if good news is bad news, that only goes on for so long. But we'll have to watch what happens next week because there's a few things that are happening next week that are kind of interesting. We're going to see CPI. We're going to see PPI. Let me take a look at the list here that I printed for us. On Tuesday, nothing on Monday. On Tuesday, we're going to see PPI, core PPI and producer price index. Estimates are for about an increase of about 0.1 to 0.2%, right on where it's been. CPI is going to be released on Wednesday at 8:30 in the morning. That's going to be pretty important because we know the Fed's been watching what's going on. Inflation, they're talking about the drop in inflation or the deflation is transitory. They believe that's going to pick up substantially. We're still only looking at about 0.1 to 0.2%, depending on where you're looking at in terms of estimates. And we're going to be seeing the Treasury budget on Thursday. We're going to be seeing initial claims, continuing claims, import and export prices. That will be interesting to see because we'll see how much of the import prices are being affected and export prices by tariffs. On Friday, we're going to see retail sales. Now, retail sales is interesting because estimates are for about anywhere from about 0.5 to 0.7% increase on retail sales. Last month, we saw a drop about 2%. I wouldn't be surprised if we continue to see a little bit of a drop, especially after the fact that markets came in May pretty well and consumer confidence could be under scrutiny. We're also going to see preliminary University of Michigan consumer sentiment at 98. This is for June after a print of about 100 in May. So business inventories will be also out, industrial production and capacity utilization. All those numbers will go into the calculation of how manufacturing is doing, and more importantly, what we're looking at for GDP next quarter. Like I said, several players in the area of the Fed are already starting to predict about a 1% to 2% broad range, but a 1% to 2% increase in GDP, and that's pretty shy of what we've been looking at, but that does tie out pretty well to what we're seeing across the board with manufacturing and factory orders, production, as well as employment. So something to keep an eye on. If nothing else, we made up a new word, tariff fornication. Tariff fornication, I like the sound of that. Let's get to some listener questions. By the way, if you have any questions you want to ask, oftentimes I'll hit you back with an email, but we could also put it on the show and you can be heard by tens of thousands of people, millions over time. You can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the Ask Andrew button and just simply right away, ask your question. The first one's from Robert and Robert Taylor. And he says, I've heard you say multiple times I wasn't sure if it was on DH Unplugged or the Disciplined Investor podcast, that tariffs are bad. And he doesn't disagree, he says. What would you propose the U.S. government do to get China to behave better in world markets? Truly curious. Love the podcast. Robert, I mean, this is a thing that we've been going back and forth with for some time now, right? We it's really hard to identify exactly what can be done, what should be done, how it should be done, because when we're looking at the situation with China, it's multi-lined. I mean, right now we have a problem with, obviously, intellectual property threat. We have a problem with the way they do dumping, their pricing, the fact that their country, as a country, are supporting failed banks and failed institutions, supportive of them. But realizing something I think that's important. They're not a democracy. They're a communist nation that works on quasi-capitalism. I guess it's the best way to describe it. And they're doing everything to try to get ahead. And I think that's extremely important. The problem, though, that we have is that with regard to, with China, there isn't much that we can do. I mean, we created this monster. We wanted cheaper goods. We wanted offshore our companies. The problem is it probably has to start with some kind of change to corporate attitudes as well as domestic attitudes on, you know, how we spend money, how we buy things, what we expect. Because this is going to happen time and time again with other countries around the world as we offshore our employment, offshore our manufacturing. And unfortunately, the problem is that the solution is so difficult because we can't necessarily bring it back here. The reason we can't is that the manufacturing here between benefits, between salaries, requirements, between, a lot of our conditions of workplace and how we have to make sure that those are at a level that are significantly greater than what we have, of course, in other countries around the world where we're willing to buy products from companies that don't treat their employees really well. And then we look back at, well, we don't want to pay more money. Yet at the same time, we're okay with getting a little bit of a quality, you know, reduced quality on the situation. It's a no-win situation for everybody because once we solve the problem, it's going to cost us a lot more. And if you're okay with that, understanding that it's going to cost the consumer a lot more and it's going to be probably, yes, beneficial in the long haul, then the problem can be solved. Many of these. And I think the big issue I have right now is really not so much with China with regard to the goods and the offshoring that we've done. I'm okay with that. And I think that the manufacturing process I'm okay with. I agree that the theft of intellectual property is the problem. That's what has to be solved. And I just, you're going to have better international laws or don't do business with them. It's this whole tariff stuff on the other side is going to really break economies. So I think it has to be done piece by piece, building back our requirements. And if they don't work, then just don't do business with their companies that are involved in stealing of intellectual property across the board. But trying to put tariffs on them, they have other ways and methods and means that they can get around it. So I just don't think that works. So that's why I think that the problem with tariffs doesn't really play. Gerald writes me, he says, I was heading over to Market Watch this morning, and he said there was a quote. We saw this headline in Market Watch this morning. The woman who watched, all right, let me start again. I'm not going well here. Gerald writes, I saw this headline on Market Watch this morning. The woman who nailed the 2018 stock market volatility blow up has kicked off an actively managed ETF. He asked, what's the difference between a mutual fund and an actively managed ETF? I know some technical differences, such as you could trade an ETF during regular hours, and maybe the fee structure is different. But I've always thought that the advantage of a mutual fund is that it was actively managed versus an ETF, which is more of on autopilot. He says, now I'm confused. Love the show. Jerry from Cincy, Ohio. All right, a couple things. First of all, a mutual fund can be an index or passively managed, or it can be actively managed. The idea here, it's the same thing for an ETF. ETF can be index-based or passively managed, and it can be actively managed. It's just a structure. So the difference really that you're looking at here is the idea of actively managed versus passively managed. And a lot of times we can use the word passive management as interchangeable with index investing. And the thing is that a mutual fund has usually a manager, and it usually can be actively managed, where they're picking stocks, they're making decisions. You go to and you look at what their portfolio is. It will change. It doesn't necessarily have to align to a particular index, where as a passive mandate in a fund or an ETF means you have to stick to and be aligned with that index stock by stock. That's what people want. That's what people, you know, deserve. Now, you can look at, just go look up index mutual fund, and you'll find several. Vanguard has them. RIDEX has them. There's a ton of companies that have index-based mutual funds. Yes, the structure is different, and we're not going to get into that discussion, but to answer your question is you can do it in either structure, however you want to actually invest. ETFs have been the ground because of the lower cost structure potential of utilizing indexing inside of that, but there still is both, and you have the opportunity to invest either way in either of those particular investments. So don't get confused. You shouldn't be confused. It's essentially the same. Jim writes, Jim Kimmins, he writes, I'm a religious listener of your podcast. No matter what is on, I'm listening, no matter who's on. He says, as a Northwestern Mutual advisor, we get weekly market updates from Brent Shuddy. Is there a reason it feels as though you two have different views on how the markets are going? Brett feels like there's a lot of good news in the economy and there's a lot of things to be bullish about. Lately, it feels like you are headed down looking at some bad times in the future. As a matter of fact, last week's or 2 weeks ago podcast seemed pretty bearish. You're both smart and just wondering why things are different. I think that there's two things to look at. Yes, I think you can look at the economy, as we've talked about many times, as generally being solid or at least on good ground. But there's other things that are playing into this. It's not just the economy, and you understand that the economy is important to understand as a backdrop for how businesses are doing and what the potential is. But at the same time, you have to look at what's happening in terms of valuations. You have to look at where sentiment is. You have to look at what's coming down the road. Because right now that the economics are looking good, they look good into the fourth quarter as well, didn't they? Meanwhile, we had like a 20% swoon. Okay, it came all the way back. I get you that. I give you that. And yes, it could be because there is a backdrop. There was some technical issue going on, but you have to look at what is really happening. What's behind the moves? Where's the Fed going? What's the rest of the world look like? I mean, I think you have to take a lot of components in this and look at what earnings outlooks are, what companies are saying, what investors are doing, how they're playing this. All this goes into the big picture of what is the long-term sentiment, opportunity, and what is going to happen with markets. So right now, am I bearish? I don't think so. I think that I am, I would say, optimistically neutral. I would say that would probably be the best way to describe it now. You could probably say that I am cautiously optimistic. I really do think that these tariffs are, I've talked about 100 times. This will be the last show for a while that I really dig into this. But I do think that these tariffs are really a negative situation for the economy. And we've seen what it's done to the economies worldwide. And because we are so interconnected and we have this globalization that has been a big part of the story of markets rising and companies doing better for many years. And now we have really the one thing that's helping companies is buybacks. And that's not going to last forever. It can't. Eventually, companies will buy back all their stocks, if you really think about this, into the future, infinitum. So I think that right now we have to look at is a situation that there is a market that, again, I would say optimistically neutral on this. And I think that there is a lot of volatility that we're going to see throughout the year and into the election. I don't want to even get into what happens if this person or that person gets elected and Trump is not elected, or if Trump is elected again. I'm not even going to get into that situation because that's a whole nother can of worms. that we really don't know the answer to at this point. But I think that the main issue here is, in my concern about everything, is this tariff fornication and the problem with what's happening with this wax on, wax on, tariff on, tariff off. The absolute, I would say, non-thought out, very flippant use of economic sanctions against companies to try to get them to do what we want them to do, that's not going to play well. So that's, I think, where probably the divergence of where I am and where he is in terms of our optimism with markets. So that will give you that. All right, we're going to end it right there. I want you to do me a favor and listen to DH Unplugged each and every Tuesday night. We release that with John C. Dvorak. Also, you can write me anything you want and give me your feedback. And I'm sure with this show, you're going to probably want to give me a lot of feedback, because a lot of people are thinking I'm slamming Trump and all that. I'm talking about not politics here. Let's, folks, again, I'm talking about markets and how they react to the consideration of what's happening with this ridiculousness of how we are approaching economics and forcing companies to do what we're doing. And there's a lot of questions that need to be answered. I'll give you that. But at the same time, I just don't feel this is really good for our long-term outcome. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And let me know your thoughts. Go to the Ask Andrew section. I'll be happy to answer anyone and put it on the air, put it on the show. Find out more about what we do also over there on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next week, thanks for listening. I'll see you then. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida, and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.